In Acts chapter 17, we have, as we're following the Apostle Paul in his travels, where he comes to the people of Athens. And in Acts chapter 17, I'd like to begin reading there in verse 16. We have the Apostle Paul here. It says, "Now while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was being provoked within him as he was observing the city full of idols. So he was reasoning in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Gentiles, and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be present. And also some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers were conversing with him. Some were saying, 'What would this idle babbler wish to say?' Others, 'He seems to be a proclaimer of strange deities,' because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection. And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, 'May we know what this new teaching is which you are proclaiming? For you are bringing some strange things to our ears, so we want to know what these things mean.' Now all the Athenians and the strangers visiting there used to spend their time in nothing other than telling or hearing something new. So Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, 'Men of Athens, I observe that you are very religious in all respects. For while I was passing through and examining the objects of your worship, I also found an altar with this inscription, "To an unknown God." Therefore, what you worship in ignorance, this I proclaim to you: the God who made the world and all things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and exist, as even some of your own poets have said, for we also are his children." It's interesting as we're reading this that we see this phrase that the Apostle Paul uses, that while I was passing through, he saw these things. And when we look at that, just passing through any particular area, you can see what they think a lot about, what they are concerned with. I remember, and I've mentioned this before, when we lived just south of Baltimore, that you could tell that everyone there was a Raven fan. Everything was purple, and there were Ravens everywhere and all over downtown. And when baseball season would come in, it was the Orioles. And then we live here, and you go to Pittsburgh, and well, everything's black and yellow. And you go down a little bit further south, and everything turns blue and yellow when you get down to Morgantown and the areas such as that. And we can see that people are very concerned with these things and get caught up in them. And that was what was so easy for the Apostle Paul to look at and to see what they were concerned with. He was not merely fascinated by the great number of idols and altars and temples, but he was also provoked by the spiritual poverty that he observed. He was dismayed, you might would say, and perplexed. And it had to have been painful for the Apostle Paul to see such a large group of people that were so concerned with spiritual things to be found in such a negative place, to not be serving the Lord. And so, as we look at this, we want to begin by looking at what Paul beheld. And he was able to observe much by passing through and seeing all the temples and the altars and the statues and the images. It was easy to observe the amount of money that was expended upon these things, the time and the talent that it took to make these things and to fashion them, to design them, and to put them together. And so we can see their objects of their worship, their devotion, as we read in the King James Version. The satirist Petronius said that it was easier to find a god in Athens than a man. Now, Athens was no small city, but that's quite a statement to say there were... it's kind of like that. And you go down in southern states, and some places you can say it's easier to find a church than it is a grocery store. But then you go in other places, it's easier to find a grocery store than a church. But here in Athens, there was literally a church, a temple on every corner. There was more temples than there were men. We see, as Paul says, that the city was full of idols, that it was completely and totally given to idolatry. Now let's remember that the Apostle Paul is here alone. He was usually gathered with many others and traveling with many others, but he had sent others away. We see where Paul, in verse 14, you go back, then immediately the brethren sent Paul out to go as far as the sea, and Silas and Timothy remained there. Now those who escorted Paul brought him as far as Athens, and having received a command for Silas and Timothy to come to him as soon as possible, they left. And so they had gone with him. There were problems that arose there. They were trying to come after the Apostle Paul as he spent most of his life being chased. And so he's left here alone in Athens and he's just wandering around. And what's he going to do? Well, what do? You get into a strange city. I remember when we landed in Kiev in 2003, Kip and Matt were both pretty well beat from the flight, but me, I've traveled all my life and 9-10 hours on a flight and then a little bit of time and you're in a brand new city and I'm not going to go lay down. It's just not going to happen. I'm going to walk around. And I did. I walked around and looked. I always kept our hotel. Thankfully, it was the largest building in the area. And so I was able to keep that in sight and know that I wasn't getting too far from it. But I wandered around. And that's what the Apostle Paul, it appears here, is doing. He's wandering around and looking at these things and thinking about these things. But not only is he seeing all this worship of false gods, but he's concerned. And we see that he spends his time preaching. As he always does, he goes to the synagogue, and then at every other opportunity, because the Athenians were so known for their desire to talk and discuss new things, he took advantage of that. And it's interesting, the terms that we see used in referring to the Apostle Paul. Let's remember that Athens had long been a center of Greek philosophy. It was where all the great learned ones came from. It was where they all went and spent their time and spent time in studying and thinking about things. And they looked down on Paul. And we can see this by their use of the term a babbler. Now, it's interesting to look at what that term babbler means. The word itself refers to a little bird that picks up crumbs that fall from the abundant loaf. And it began to carry the idea that of a person who would go and pick up a little bit of knowledge here and a little bit of knowledge there and then put it all together and mix it together and make himself seem to be one who was very knowledgeable. Barnes defines it as the refuse, an off-scouring of society, talkative, opinionated, a retailer of scraps of information. You know, you could bring that into the modern perspective, and a lot of bloggers are babblers. They know a little bit about this and a little bit about that, and they're going to give their opinion, even though oftentimes they're just quoting what others have already said. And they really don't know anything. For some of them, they don't know anything. They're just sending out pre-washed, I guess you could say, information. And so they were looking down at Paul and saying, this is a babbler. He's gone, he's heard a few things, and so therefore we're not going to give him a whole lot of attention. They viewed Paul much as evolutionists view creationists. Evolutionists think they think they just know everything, and well, you watch the Discovery Channel and you watch National Geographic shows and everything, and we're made out to be insane idiots who don't know anything and can't look at the geologic record and see that, well, it was all an evolving over time. They call us members of the Flat Earth Society because in the past the church, the Catholic Church, the organized churches were those that were putting people to death because they didn't believe that the earth was round and such. But, you know, they rarely will ever deal with the issues. They won't sit down. They just want to throw names at us. And that appears to be what's going on here. But they also viewed the Apostle Paul as an opportunity to feed their curiosities. Once again, they were known as a group of people who always wanted to learn something new. May we know this new teaching that you are proclaiming. Because as we can see in verse 21, they all lived for knowing something new. The Athenians and the strangers visiting there spent their time in nothing more than telling or hearing something new. And so, you know, we see their gross ignorance in these things because they apparently mistook what Paul was talking about with Jesus and the resurrection. They thought, well, these are some new gods. And I'm sure there were some artisans that were going, hey, I could craft that for you if you could tell me what a resurrection is. You tell me what this Jesus looks like, and I can craft him for you. They began to think that these were two individual gods. And when you look at the background that they had with the Greek gods and the Roman gods and everything, there was a god for everything. And so they just thought, well, Paul's got something new. And, well, you remember, he's already talked about that unknown god. They were afraid they were going to leave a god out, and so they said to the unknown god. And so here it seemed that Paul was giving them a new god, a couple of new gods for them to talk to. And so they listened to Paul as he spoke in the Areopagus. Now, when we look at Paul's subject matter, to begin by talking about their objects of worship was a good way to get their attention. This was obviously something that they were very devoted to. Just like if you walk up to someone and they're wearing a black and yellow jacket and Steelers insignia and everything, well, if you want to strike up a conversation, what do you do? Well, what do you think about Steelers? If you want to make them mad, I hate the Steelers. That'll do it real quick, won't it? You go right down to downtown Pittsburgh and talk bad about the Steelers, and you're going to catch people's attention, aren't you? You go down to downtown Baltimore and you stand there in front of the Ravens Stadium and talk bad about the Ravens, and you're gonna catch their attention. And you can see in a lot of these large municipalities, that's where everything is turned to. And that was the thing in this day and time. He went in and, I notice that you're very religious. And so in talking about their objects of worship, it was a good way to get their attention, to get them to listen to them. To listen to the Apostle Paul. And, you know, the same is true today. You know, if you want to strike up a conversation with someone, you can talk to them about sports or music or movies or books or the outdoors. It's pretty easy to tell from the way someone is dressed and the things that they talk about. You know how to strike up a conversation with them. But, you know, it's interesting that the real subject that the Apostle Paul is going to be talking about is their ignorance. He tells them, you know, this unknown God that you're talking about, that you're worried about. Let me tell you about him. You know, you're ignorant in these things. If you look there in verse 23, therefore what you worship in ignorance, this I proclaim to you. Now, was this appropriate for such dignified men of learning? As ironic as it may sound, yes, it was. You want to know everything? Well, let me tell you some things. And, you know, it's interesting how much ignorance a person can accumulate over a period of time. I know I've accumulated more than my fair share in just looking at things and trying to learn things that really have no true bearing on my own life. And so before speaking to such a refined collection of individuals, these learned men, you reckon the Apostle Paul was there wringing his hands and biting his nails and was concerned about whether he was going to offend them, or you reckon he was thinking more like he wrote in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13, I can do all things through Christ Jesus who strengthens me. And so after proclaiming the one God who gives to all people life and breath and all things, and telling them that in him we live and move and exist, some mocked. And others gave the old excuse of, well, we'll hear you again concerning this. That's not the only time the Apostle Paul will hear that in his life. And it's not the only time that it's ever been uttered. Many will try and give that. It's kind of like the guy telling the girl at the end of the day, I'll call you. And that seems to be a little bit of what, well, we'll talk to you some more about this, and maybe we will or maybe we won't. When you look at the end result, Paul's sermon was almost totally rejected. You know, when you look at a lot of the other cities that the Apostle Paul goes into, we see where large numbers obey the gospel, but we don't read anything of a congregation being established here in the city of Athens. Nowhere in the scriptures do you read of a congregation in the city of Athens. And when you look historically, it's difficult to find anything of a congregation in Athens. Now, even in other places where there were just a few that obeyed the gospel, there were congregations that were established there and that remained for many years to come. We don't have any record of Paul or any other apostle returning to talk to the Athenians. All that is said is what we read in verse 34, that some men joined him and believed, among whom also were Dionysius the Areopagite and a woman named Damaris, and others with them. A rather small grouping of people compared to the large numbers that had obeyed the gospel in other cities. And you know, someone has once said that every man ought to have the right to hear the gospel once before anybody has the right to hear it twice. And you know, the Apostle Paul lived by that creed. He traveled all over the world of his day and preaching the gospel to everyone. And he gave the Athenians the opportunity to hear the gospel, and they rejected it, and he wasn't going to waste his time on them. But he did what he could. He did what he should. And you know, when you look at some of the reactions to the preached word in the book of Acts, we can see that they're very varied. We see in Acts chapter 17 and verse 32 that they mocked. That's what they did. Some mocked the Apostle Paul. Now, when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, they began to sneer. But others said, we will hear you again concerning this. If you go and look in chapter 24 and verse 25, we see again where he's told, well, go on when I find the time. I'll call for you. We see where others were cut to the quick and gnashing their teeth at him, talking about Stephen there. And when he told the fathers of the Israelite nation exactly what they had done and gave them their history lesson and rebuked them, they were cut, just like in Acts chapter 2. But they didn't follow too well. In Acts chapter 2, however, we see that they were pierced to the heart. You know, if you want a soil test, the best way to test the soil of people is by preaching the gospel. You'll get an immediate reaction of how they feel about things. You'll find out real quick whether they are concerned with God or not. And many will say, well, yeah, we'll listen to you some more about this, but it's more of a, we'll placate him right now and then we'll go on and maybe he'll forget about us. Or that's an interesting thought, but then you never hear from them again. Or when you try to talk to them some more, they seem very uninterested. So let's go ahead and begin looking at the application that we can make from this. And Lord willing, we'll look at some of this morning and we'll look at the rest of it this evening. But, you know, really, I want us to look at what would people see if they pass through our city? If they pass through our homes? If one passed through and examined the objects of your worship, what would they behold? What would they see? Remember that these men in Athens were very highly educated men and that they were blinded by their objects of worship. And so imagine if someone was to pass through your home and to observe your literature, music, and language. If someone came to your home and looked at your bookshelves, your coffee table, your nightstand, what would they observe? What would they see that you spend all of your money on for the younger generation if they were to look at your Facebook profile or your MySpace profile? What would they see as the top, as the most important? What would people see when they came into your home? All of your spare time and your money spent reading the latest new author, reading the latest Hollywood gossip in the magazines that constantly extol this worldly pleasure. Would they see a house that has no time or money left over for wholesome books or edifying magazines or gospel papers that could be much more profitable? Do they see in your trash the bulletin but yet laying out on your coffee table OK magazine or whatever the latest rag might be? Oh, but I don't want to read the things that the Brotherhood put out because there's so many controversies in them. Have you ever opened your newspaper? What's it full of? Controversies. But yet we pay for that and we have it delivered to our home several days a week and we'll sit down and we devote a certain amount of time to reading that, don't we? But yet we don't have the time nor the money to sit down and read things. We still have time and money for a nice television set and for cable and we can sit down and we can watch these things and we have plenty of time to devote to those things, to the study of the things of this world, but we don't have time for additional Bible studies. I don't have time to prepare for them. Well, sure you do. What about that favorite television show that you watch? Oh, but that's my downtime. You see, we need to understand that the things that we give the most time to, that's our idols today. That we can find ourselves being a lot more like the Athenians than we think, more than we want to believe. That when people come and walk through our lives and see how we live and see the things that we do and what we devote the most of our time to, they will go, I would perceive that you're very religious and that these things are your gods. What would they see? Have you listened to the music today? All you have to do is turn on your television and you can see the lifestyle of those who sing it, of Britney Spears. You don't have to change very many channels and you're going to come across her whether you want to or not and all the problems that she's going through, and she's not the only one. You can look at pretty much any pop musician out there, and I don't care if they began on Disney, they're going to go, and that's where Britney Spears began and Christina Aguilera and Jessica Simpson and all those others, they all began innocent on Disney and look at where they've progressed. Think about these things. CDs which glorify fornication and play on the emotions to justify sinful relationships. You can just go back to Elvis Presley. Shall I stay? Would it be a sin? Because I can't help falling in love with you. And this is prior to marriage is what he's singing about. And all these things, they're presenting the things of the world. Literally, pornography of the airwaves. And nowadays, whatever is not worth saying is sung. You know, you just think the worst things that you can imagine, and that's what's in our movies today. Comedians are always having to push the envelope, carry it a step further. Many have made a career out of being the raunchiest, the most disgusting. Dr. Howard Hansen in the American Journal of Psychiatry had this to say. He said, "Music is a curiously subtle art with innumerable varying emotional connotations. It is made up of many ingredients, and according to the proportions of these components, it can be soothing or invigorating, ennobling or vulgarizing, philosophical or orgiastic. It has powers for evil as well as for good. Music calms, soothes the savage beast." Isn't that the phrase? But yet it can also stir it up, can it? You put the right rhythms together and you get that going and emotions run high and, well, you'll just do anything. Or it can calm you down. One sage once said, "Let me write the songs of a nation, and I care not who writes its laws." Because what are the youth? What do the youth listen to? The songs of the nation. They listen to those that are filling up the airwaves. Are they listening to the lawmakers? Do they care what's on the law books? No, they care about what's written in the songs. That's why when you read newspapers from England to the U.S., you read where people are just turning over to a lifestyle of orgies. We thought the 60s and the 70s were bad with the free love, but it's a lot more organized nowadays. There's the instance of a young lady who put on her Facebook account, or Bebo, not Facebook, but it's the British version of Facebook, that she was having a gathering of friends, and it got out to others, and turned out there was around 80 or 90 individuals showed up there, and things that went on there that you just wouldn't believe a 14, 15, and 16-year-old would know about, much less do, and record, and later post. It's amazing the way that the world has gone. Imagine if someone passed through and looked at your CD collection or looked at your movies and the things that you spend the most of your time doing. What would they see? Imagine if they spent some time listening to what you say. What would you be known as? Someone who has seasoned his speech with grace, making sure that he presents things that can be beneficial to those that are around them, or perhaps we are among those that we have to blush around from time to time. Or perhaps we've listened to so much music and watched so many movies, we don't even blush anymore. We don't think anything about it. You know, I presented a lesson actually a couple of times looking at our speech and, you know, looking at the use of euphemisms and such. But, you know, it's not just the euphemisms anymore, is it? What used to not be allowed on the television is now allowed. Phrases that any good human being would frown at and that sailors would blush in using in front of mixed company are now presented on our televisions on a nightly basis. And lo and behold, it begins to slip out of our mouths from time to time, doesn't it? What are you known for talking about? What do you joke about the most? We need to be concerned with these things. If people were to pass through our lives and to speak with us, would they go away going, "Boy, he knows all the best dirty jokes"? Would they go away going, "Wow, that's a word I haven't heard in a while"? Or as Ray Stevens says, "You use words I never heard back then, and even now only hear them when I'm stuck in a New York cab in 5 o'clock traffic." You hear that? What about our lives? If Paul were to pass through here, what would he see? How would he respond? What would he say is our gods? Would he say, "Will Ferrell is our God"? Would he say, "Britney Spears, Elvis Presley, the Beatles"? Just insert the Penguins, the Steelers, the Mountaineers. What's our God? Ask yourself, what do your kids know the most about? What do you teach them the most about? Folks, we need to think about these things. Paul might would perceive that we're very religious, but about the wrong things. And so we need to turn our attention back to God. We should be known as people who the Lord's name comes up in a good way. Not in damning everyone, but in speaking of the grace and mercy of God and the judgment that is to come. The righteous judgment. And telling others of the Savior that died upon the cross that we could have forgiveness of our sins. What are we known for talking about the most? What do we spend the most time with? The things of the heart, whether you like it or not, will proceed out of the mouth. And so we need to understand, folks, I said we, right? I'm not saying you need to watch what you say and you need to watch what you watch and listen to. We need to be careful with these things. And make sure that we're not giving too much time to the things of this world. That, as we're going to look this evening, we're not getting too caught up in the materialistic society that we live in. That we're not getting too caught up in the things of this world and allowing that to become our gods. Because we cannot serve two masters. Isn't that what the Lord said? You cannot serve God and mammon, I believe the King James Version reads there. For else you either hate the one and love the other. You can't have it all. Just understand that. The child of God cannot have it all in the world. He can have God. He can have salvation. And that should be of prime importance. Perhaps you're here this morning and you've obeyed the gospel, but you've not remained faithful. Perhaps you're not watching what you say. Perhaps you're not watching what you do. Perhaps you're setting a poor example to others. Perhaps you have idols that you didn't realize you had. Well, now's the time to turn away from those things of idolatry and turn back to the Lord. To devote your wisdom to the wisdom of God rather than to the wisdoms of this world. Whatever your situation might be, whether it's obeying the gospel today, coming forward, confessing your belief that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, repenting of your sins and being buried in baptism, putting on Christ as your Lord and Savior, through obedience to His gospel, or making right things that are wrong in your life, do that this day while you have the opportunity as we stand and as we sing.